This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
There's a national network of local, nonprofit organizations working together to guide a student's education and improve their outcomes from the time they start learning to the time they start earning.
So it's a bold, audacious goal to once and for all change lives.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll learn about the Strive Together Network and hear how they want to create student success from cradle to career. We'll also spend an academic minute hearing about the cradle-to-career social activities of, you know, apes. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. Working to build positive educational outcomes from cradle to career. That's the rather lofty mission of the Strive Together Network, a nonprofit national network of more than 70 community partnerships. The network has affiliates in 32 states, also the District of Columbia and New Zealand. New York has 6 affiliates, including one in the Capital District called the Albany Promise. Then there's Florida. The third most populous state only has one affiliate, serving one school district in Escambia County, which is on the western tip of the panhandle. That is called Achieve Escambia. I sat down with Kimberly Krupa, the director of Achieve Escambia, and asked her to talk about the Strive Together Network and its goals locally and worldwide.
The Strive Together Network is a national network of cradle-to-career partners, grassroots organizations that are interested in improving long-term educational and also workforce outcomes for geographically limited populations over a time-bound period. So it's a bold, audacious goal to once and for all change lives.
So everyone would take care of their own local area, but there are like national standards.
Absolutely. There's a national process, rigorous time data tested strategies of how to roll this process out, how to do systems level, population level work in targeted areas, usually cities. Most of them are one county, maybe two counties. The big cities have multiple school districts, so they're working with superintendents across, let's say a city of Portland has 12 or 13 superintendents. Our specific organization in the Florida Panhandle is Achieve Escambia. We're interested in one county, one school district, one superintendent, and we're up to probably about 100 community-based organizations, businesses, nonprofits who are invested and interested in this work.
Interesting, in a state as large as Florida, that we're it.
We are it. And that speaks a lot about where our community is in redefining itself. Escambia County is on the rise, and we have a core group of community influencers who are committed to not leaving anybody behind. And that's how it starts, is really with that seed. And what they've done over the past 2 years here in Pensacola is kind of bring the community into the conversation and ask them, how do you want this to look? Because this isn't going to work coming from the business community. We need everybody in. So having the idea generate from really funders and investors who are tired of funding Band-Aids and throwing money at a symptom and not able to ever get to the root of the problem, which for our community is really intergenerational poverty, as it is in many of the Strive Together communities.
So cradle to career, nothing ambitious there. Where do you start? Where does somebody in the cradle come under your umbrella?
Well, we start with the data. You never know how many assumptions you harbor until you check them against the data. So it's not just the data, but it's the data broken down by geography, by race and gender, slicing and dicing demographically, going into the hot pockets, poverty hotspots, as our local community institute calls it, and really being committed to closing achievement gaps at all levels. So not being satisfied with the aggregate number. Wanting to know, where do we need help? Because that's what's going to be the flashlight that guides investments and decision-making.
Do you deal with actual, you know, person in the cradle, or you deal with the people who deal with them?
We are trying to attack it from all angles, but you can't ignore the family. You can't ignore the caregivers, the parent adults in the family unit. And I think that this is the next task for the Collective Impact National Movement, is to really focus on what happens in that family unit and how can we stop blaming parents, but include parents in the conversation that needs to happen about change. So only 15% of a child's life from kindergarten to 12th grade is spent in school. So what do we do with that 85% of time? That's the discussion that needs to be happening about families. And so we know that if families are not able to, let's say, be their child's first teacher, not everyone has the resources or their own knowledge, the time to dedicate to that. So how can we work with what families bring to the table, which is the philosophy underlying all of this? But really, it's about developing character. We can do a lot of character development within the family unit that can do as much to raise the achievement level of that child than an IQ can any day. So it's learning how to work with others. It's learning how to stop, think, and act. Learning how to share, kind of like everything I need to know I learned in kindergarten, can really be what we communicate as family empowerment.
And how do you communicate to, say, a three-year-old in a poverty situation?
What we do is kind of a multi-pronged approach. So if you get to be three, we want to know if you're on target and meeting all of your benchmarks. Are you meeting three-year-old standards? We need to continuously measure all children. We can't just be measuring, let's say, the preemies, who get really intensive interventions throughout the early years.
Is this done by school districts, by family doctors? Who does this?
This is usually done through, if we're talking about a low-income child, it's done through their Medicaid provider. But there are great incentives that the Medicaid insurance companies have to pay physicians to do developmental screening tests. There are rewards for parents to show up for developmental screening. They get gift cards. Often parents don't know about it, or doctors don't do it. The reimbursement for developmental screening is pretty low. So getting physicians to opt in to developmental screening is an important early safety net that we can really do nationally to move the needle. We don't have local data on this, so we're relying on national studies. 2% of all developmental and learning disabilities are caught before the first day of kindergarten. 2%. Most screening happens either when they go into a universal pre-K, as we have in Florida. So most of our kids are caught between 4 when they enter the early learning setting, or the first day of kindergarten when they go through their kindergarten screener.
And since these are national numbers you're dealing with, I guess you're dealing with the same type of screening whether you were here or whether you were in Albany, New York.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And actually, Albany and some of the other Northeastern communities that are part of Strive Together have really robust universal developmental screening systems from birth to 5 years old. So doctors are loading screening scores into a system that's shared by daycare providers, by preschools, by hospitals, and you get alerts and measurements about where that child is. And this is really important if up to 40% of the kids entering kindergarten are not ready. We need to know if there is an intervention we need to be doing at the community level to save those kids, because every day they lose is tripled in terms of how much they fall behind.
Are you and organizations like you around the country actively recruiting doctors to get into this?
We are beginning to. It's tremendously hard to do. For example, in Pensacola, we have not had a developmental pediatrician for many years. We recently have hired one as part of the Sacred Heart Hospital System. If anyone wants to get into this profession, there is a dire need for developmental pediatricians. Of course, you're going to have to dedicate 30 years of your life plus to school, but there's a shortage of the talent needed to work in this early learning setting.
Yeah. Let's get out of early. That three-year-old is now a third grader.
Right.
What kind of progress is being monitored there?
Third grade, the big benchmark is literacy. what are their English language arts or their reading scores. And we know if in our county, 66% of kindergartners pass the kindergarten test, which means one-third fail. By the time they get to third grade reading, we're in 56% passing third grade reading. But if you disaggregate that by race, we've got schools in groups that are in the 30th percentile.
I imagine it would be that stark if you did it by poverty level also.
Poverty level, by geography and zone and attendance district, looking at intergenerational families and what their generational achievement levels are in the family unit. What we see in Escambia County is the economic mobility measure. We're in the bottom 2% in kids who are able to rise up out of their economic situations nationally. We're in the bottom 2% of counties. And that's the beauty of being data-driven, is that the numbers don't lie. And we need to know why it is that way, but also what's currently working and where do we need help.
Still to come, our conversation with Kimberly Krupa continues with a look at what the Strive Together Network offers older students. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And while you're there, subscribe to The Best of Our Knowledge's podcast or download the WAMC radio app to listen on demand anytime, anyplace. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is Kimberly Krupa, director of Achieve Escambia, which is an affiliate of the Strive Together Network, a global effort to provide students with good educational outcomes from cradle to career. I asked her what happens if a child comes into the network as an older student.
There is a lot of amazing work going on that's putting really our county on the map for high school career development. So we've got 48 academies at the high school level right here in our Florida county. And the percent of middle and high school students in our county who were able to access those technical courses, that training that's directly tied to local industry and labor market, has risen from 49% just 2 years ago to 57% in 2017. So we're really on the map nationally, looking at all the Strive Together partners for the percent of students participating in a career academy, but then getting really amazing employment above the median average for our community once they obtain that industry certification. So they're getting not just their high school diploma, but like a tangible training that they can then take to an employer and begin to make $45,000 a year right out of high school.
Is there any type of measurement for success getting into college?
Yes, success in college is measured in many different ways. One early way, looking still at high school, is the percentage of students who apply for the free application for federal student aid, which is a huge determinant on who goes to college because FAFSA connects students to local, federal, and state money and also Pell Grants. So if we look at the data per high school broken down on who's participating in FAFSA, we can really start to get to low enrollment rates in college. There's a direct correlation between FAFSA completion and college enrollment. Also, college enrollment retention and graduation is linked to FAFSA. So if we start with just who's applying for this resource, which is determined by an objective calculator. There's no harm in applying. Everyone can apply. The application period opens every year on October 1st, runs through the winter. And we see in some of our high schools, I'm looking at the data right now, one of our high schools is 22% completion rate. There are some Strive Together communities that are tackling this beast who have 80 to 90% completion rates in their college enrollment rates are also skyrocketing. Now, statewide, Florida is only 34%. So this is really a state urgent matter, statewide urgency. But it's not just getting to college, it's staying the course. Our university president in her State of the Union last week has a really simple message, plan to graduate. One of our Strive Together partners has mission graduate. There's all kinds of really mobilizing terms in the Strive Together network that communicate the same message, stay the course. 65% of Florida jobs will require some sort of college degree or industry credential.
How long has this network been going?
Strive Together is almost 10 years old. It broke away from a really successful cradle-to-career partner called Strive Partnership in Cincinnati. And what Strive Partnership did to move the needle in kids' lives was get voters to pass a $15 million tax investing in preschool. And it was called Preschool Promise. It's still going strong. Florida's ahead of the game. We have VPK. We've got universal preschool, and we're one of the early adopters nationally, our state. What we struggle with here with preschool is not just getting kids to attend preschool, but because it's voluntary, getting them to stay until the last day and take advantage of all those instructional hours.
What's a good day for you? What do you see that you says, hey, we're doing good. There's some success right there.
I'd say a good day is when I can show someone the data and see the light bulb go off in their mind like it did with me and kind of use this infectious enthusiasm for using data to generate change, but seeing that through osmosis or just absorption in someone else who is directly working with kids and then have them strategize and come up with ideas on their own. That's a good day. There's someone in the network who says, you're not going to change anything until you, number one, change someone's job description. And number two, change the policies and procedures, the flow charts or the process manuals for how something is done. And I really believe that's true, that until we can change behavior on the ground, everyone who touches one of these statistics, change is not possible.
Do you have trouble with people saying, you've got all these numbers and statistics, but I've got little Johnny over here, and he's not a statistic. He's just having trouble in third grade.
I do, yes, because behind this data is a story, and there's a person. And getting to the impact of these numbers on a child's life is the ultimate challenge. The children are all around us. They're our children, our neighbors' children, our friends' children. And telling their stories is really a trust-building exercise. You don't want to, you know, exploit a child or their family or their circumstances, but you also need to communicate the impact because people respond to stories. It's really hard to sell and communicate data. Way easier to break it down to an individual. So it's a balance of talking about population change and systems, but then also your child.
Is this network growing?
It is growing, but it's growing really intentionally. You know, the danger here is you don't want to become another system, the collective impact system. We also are really cautious about blooming in a community and then attracting all the money and getting too big and then competing with the partners who are actually the change makers. So Achieve Escambia, like the other Strive Together communities, is really the holder of the process where we kind of own the urgency and we've got the tools to bring people together and really facilitate these conversations. But we don't have any intention of seizing upon someone's funding base, of changing their board composition. If any of that is to happen, it's through a shared process.
And I was also thinking nationally, is there going to be, you know, an Achieve Miami-Dade coming up or whatever they would call it down there, you know, just growing around the places that aren't served yet in the country?
The challenge, and absolutely, collective impact is sort of the jargon name for this. And if you Google collective impact, you probably have millions and millions of hits because it's really hot right now. Miami is really big. It's hard to do collective impact in really big cities. There's a great organization in the Bronx that's just working on a section of the Bronx on specific structural projects. And that's one way to go at it. The beauty is really when it's geographically bound and possible, like Achieve Escambia. We want to be able to make achievements in Escambia. We can't do that if we're a metro collective impact. A lot of this sounds maybe intimidating. And we like to say that we're a systemic approach. We're not a program. But I would say a little tweak to that is that there are many really cool initiatives happening within the system that people can find a place in and a way to participate. Whether or not you're a parent wondering how you can close the achievement gap with your own child, there are specific tools and ways that you can use the data in your own life and find a place for yourself in this collective impact movement. And I'd say the two words on what we can do to close achievement gaps and disparities are language and literacy. All the brain science and research is pointing to just the nuts and bolts. Read to your child. Read to your child.
Kimberly Krupa is the director of Achieve Escambia, an affiliate of the Strive Together Network. You can find the affiliate nearest you on their website, strivetogether.org. They say you can tell an awful lot about a person by the company they keep. You can also say the same thing about apes. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Do primates learn from being social? I'm Dr. Lynn Pascarella, president of the Association of American Colleges and Universities. And today on the Academic Minute, Lauren Howard, assistant professor of psychology and scientific and philosophical studies of the mind at Franklin and Marshall College, delves into how apes and chimpanzees pass along and learn information.
Much like humans, many species of non-human primates are adept social learners. For example, chimpanzees have the ability to learn from the actions of social partners, allowing them to gain information without having to teach themselves. Though it is clear that primates can glean information socially, until recently we did not know whether social context actually influenced how apes remembered information. Is learning from a social partner better for memory, or do apes equally observe and remember information regardless of how they receive it? In order to answer this question, we ran a study at the Lincoln Park Zoo in Chicago, exploring whether chimpanzees and gorillas were more likely to remember the actions of a social model versus an inanimate object. We played the apes videos of either a human hand building a block tower or a mechanical claw building the same block tower. After apes were sufficiently familiarized to the videos, we assessed their memory for the tower. Of course, you can't simply ask an ape what they remember about an event. Therefore, we used a piece of technology known as an eye tracker to passively record information about where and how long the apes were looking. This allowed us to explore how both attention and memory were influenced by the inclusion of a social model. Our results showed that chimpanzees and gorillas were more likely to remember the event that included a social model. This wasn't because the social model was more interesting, as apes attended to the videos with the human hand and mechanical claw equally. Instead, the information gained from the social model was simply remembered better over time. This research provides insight into how social primate species pass along and learn information. In fact, it may even shed light on our own social proclivities, setting the foundation for our significantly more extensive human culture.
That was Lauren Howard of Franklin and Marshall College.
The Academic Minute is a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, in partnership with the Association of American Colleges and Universities. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Go to WAMC.org and click on the programs link. While you're there, subscribe to our podcast or any of the other WAMC or National Productions podcasts. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@WAMC.org. And you can find us on Twitter at TBOOKnowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at WAMC.org.